You know, it's been fun growing up here and watching the evolution of Club Corp, started with Brookhaven. Of course, now, my gosh, they got 200 golf and country clubs spread out over 27 states or in foreign countries. They're in football stadiums. They own Firestone and Mission Hills. And they were bought out for a little over $1 billion last year. And one of the first things they did with all that money was go out and find themselves a new CEO. Well, he's not so new anymore. He's been around 6 months. David Pillsbury is the CEO of Club Corp, and he's making some changes. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here, David. Thanks for having me.
So you're not divesting, you are investing. There are a couple of initiatives I want to talk about. So you manage, Club Corp has always managed clubs for a long time.
Well, we've owned them, though. And there's a difference, and we'll talk about what that looks like, because there's subtle differences, but they're significant.
Well, but now, I mean, there are all these clubs spread out across the country that are member-owned, and they're in municipalities. I grew up with one in Pampa, Texas. You don't have any economy of scale. It's hard to find people to work. So the idea is you're going to go in and take over the management of these clubs, but not own them?
Yeah, so what's happened, David, the dynamic of the industry, if you look at it, 10 years ago, less than 10% of private country clubs were managed by a third party. In other words, they'd have a board, and they'd go hire a manager, and they'd have an accountant, and
they'd have fights on the board.
Yeah, absolutely. They try and go it alone. You got all these really smart guys, typically men and women, on boards who are successful entrepreneurs running their business. And somehow when they come together to run a country club, they kind of lose their minds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And they every club thinks they're unique and they have unique challenges, but the reality is many of the challenges are the same. So what's happened in the last 10 years is people have started to figure that out. And so now more than 20% of these clubs are managed by a third party. But Club Corp during that decade has been focused on acquiring clubs. That's been the model. And we've really stayed out of the management, third-party management business, and we're changing that now.
And there were a lot of clubs to acquire because they were dropping like flies. I would imagine come begging to Club Corp saying, we don't want to lose this jewel, but we can't afford to do this anymore. But it's not about golf anymore. It's about lifestyle, right?
It is about lifestyle. And what's happening with these clubs is the smart clubs, the clubs that have really smart board members, are figuring out that there is scale benefit to being associated with a company like Club Corp that's been running clubs for 61 years for our own account, to say if we can plug into the systems and the infrastructure and the expertise and still maintain control of our club and get access to a network of more than 300 clubs to go enjoy, that could be a pretty good idea.
And that's the key for membership, I would think, because that's one of the appealing things, because you don't care who's hiring the chef, really, as long as the food's good. But the ability to go have a place to go when I'm visiting in Atlanta was always a great appeal.
It's a major benefit. There's sort of two sides. There's the front of the stage, which are the benefits that accrue to the members, which are the ones you're talking about. But then there's everything that happens behind the curtain, which matters, because clubs typically that are operating on an island independently, They have no affiliation with anyone. They're on their own. They're literally like a small retail outlet. And if you get connected to a large organization like Club Corp, all sorts of interesting benefits accrue to you from behind the curtain. So the member doesn't see it directly, but indirectly it represents benefit to the club. And here's why that's important. It creates more money for the club to reinvest in amenities that make that club more relevant as a lifestyle club. Many of these clubs are stuck and they can't go renovate a fitness facility because they don't have the money. And if we manage their club, and the club makes more money, it makes more money available for reinvestment back in the club.
So you're going to want, obviously you want them to pay you, be able to pay your bills. But what level of control can you have over that? To some degree, you have to. A lot of these have, very restrictive memberships, or as you talk about, very high-powered CEOs that frequent the club or have sat on the board for years and years. What sort of autonomy are you going to have?
Well, what happens is the way a management services agreement works, and it's called club life management, is we have a contract with the club, and we report to the board of directors. And we set a business plan, and we get approval of the business plan, and we operate and execute that business plan.
So they've still got the board.
They still have the board. And so they can fire us. They can say, we don't like what you're doing anymore. We want you out. So typically the contracts are 2 or 3 years long, and the board maintains control of the club. And see, that's the beauty. They get the benefit of being associated with Club Corp. For the membership, it's access to the network of clubs. For the business, it's access to the expertise and the economies of scale of Club Corp. So they get all those benefits without giving up control of their club.
But you don't want to taint your name either. I mean, yeah, Club Corp has a pretty good name, but you got, you know, big names, Woodlands and, you know, Mission Hills and all those places. You don't want to be dragged down, so you've got to have some, you've got to have some rights too, I would say.
Well, we're selective. You know, we're not interested in managing every club. We're interested in managing the clubs that really fit the profile of our network of clubs.
So how big is big? How many clubs can you manage?
We think we could manage, you know, a couple of hundred clubs without too much difficulty, because we've got all of the infrastructure is built. And so we've got, by the end of this year, we'll probably have 12 to 15 under contract, and then another 15 or so next year. And so you can sort of visualize how that growth curve looks over the next few years.
Now, separate from that, I guess it's separate from that, you've also announced sort of a high-end separate group called The Collection.
Right.
Which I gather, I envision sort of Brook Hollow, Dallas Country Club type clubs. And you're going to manage those, but they're not going to be part of the other group?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So the Club Life management team, which is a dedicated management team that works exclusively with clubs that choose third-party management with us, with Club Life Management, that team works on the management services portfolio. That is targeted at a certain type of club. The Collection is targeted primarily at member-owned clubs that are very, very high-end. And we visualize the Collection only having 25 or 30 clubs in it total. So it's not a big group of clubs. It's a very elite, special group of clubs that is interested in differentiating themselves from the rest of the portfolio.
So you've been here almost 6 months now. You've taken a look at the portfolio too. What about the proliferation of, you know, clubs within stadiums and office buildings, you know, where there's not a swimming pool or a golf club? Is that a growth area?
Great question, and it is a growth area. Let's talk about office buildings. As you know, we've got 42 city clubs, but what building owners are figuring out is they need to have shared space, amenity space for tenants, because, you know, the millennial audience doesn't want to sit at their desk all day. They want to go sit in a coffee shop environment, like a Starbucks kind of environment. Mm-hmm. And so building owners are literally taking floors and putting in fitness facilities and shared workspace environments, but they don't know how to run them. And if we have a city club on the top floor, we're sort of the obvious person to say, well, why don't we run your shared workspace and treat every one of your tenants like members? And we're finding landlords and building owners to be quite receptive to this idea. So we do think that's a significant growth opportunity. And the stadium club business, we think, is an incredible opportunity for growth. I mean, we have four now, as you know. We've got a pipeline of seven or eight more coming down the road here in the next probably 12 months. We've been in that business for 22 years, hard to believe. But we've got UT, we've got FSU, we've got Texas Tech and Baylor. And these are alumni clubs, which is great for the university.
Yep.
It creates a year-round connection with their alumni, their donors. And it's a terrific amenity for the university, and it's a fundraising source for the athletic department.
And a great excuse for those universities to bump up contribution levels to get access to that club.
Absolutely.
It works. David Pillsbury is the CEO of Club Corp. Lots of changes. It's going to be fun keeping up with what you're doing.
Well, it is fun. We've got a great company and a great Dallas legacy here, and we're really, I think, taking Bob Dedman's legacy and really taking it to another level.
It's always good to have you with us. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Thanks. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.